passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome back to another show. That's kind of a weird way of starting it, but that's what happens when you have Alyssa Langs sitting here. Hold, don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Let's get right to some headlines so we can talk to Alyssa and Steve Spurrier. He has encouraging words ahead of UGA. I can't wait to hear them. He'll join us later on. Oh, excuse me. I'll go ahead and tell you what he said. I think this team has a chance. I mean, we've got a chance to beat Georgia, and if we do, we're right in the middle of winning. Yeah, I tell you what. I'll spare you because I don't necessarily agree with anything or believe anything he says, nor do I think he is. So we'll talk to Steve in about 3 hours. David Cutcliffe says a 9-game football schedule probably inevitable. And now you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, what does he have to do with it? He coached at Ole Miss. He was a coach at Duke. Well, he works for the SEC. He may actually know something. Thank you, Cut, for breaking some news here. The Athletic does a deep dive, and the coach is going for it on fourth down. It's become a big deal. Remember Dan Lanning a couple weeks ago, Josh Heupel a week ago? Both went 0-for. Yeah, the attempts per game under 2, and the conversions are barely above 50%. Not a good idea. Sign stealing is in the news. Prime opines. This is the only way Prime can get in the news now. He's got to talk about Jim Harbaugh. He's still got to stop it. Meaning, you can know the signals, but you have to execute. RJ saying, text reviewed by Sports Illustrated show Connor Stallions claimed relationships with multiple Michigan assistants. He was apparently also working on a 600-page manifesto to run the program in the future using data on 500 Navy players to inform a recruiting theory. Something tells me Mr. Stallions needs to get some immunity before he opens up his mouth. Speaking of that, Alyssa Lang is here doing Out of Pocket today. What's going on?
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. We've got a great guest lineup. Brady Cook going to join the show, Malik Nabers, and Bookie Watson from Mississippi State. Obviously, 2 sacks over the weekend in that very interesting game against Arkansas, 7-3. I'm not sure that was the final that any of us were predicting a week ago, but really excited to talk to those guys.
So you're just back from, what, South Carolina, Missouri, mm-hmm. and we have a drink on later. You see this a lot. I was interviewing a person a couple weeks ago that was going back and doing a Missouri game. She graduated there. I think I talked to Katie George, who was doing a Louisville game. When you do your school, does it? I mean, I know from an objectivity standpoint, it doesn't affect you, but that's not where I'm going. You got a guy like Drink, who's bit of a smart aleck sometimes. Does he let you know when it's over that, hey, I won, you lost?
Yeah, you know, I think Drink and I have a pretty good relationship. I would at least like to think that. I really enjoy talking to him, and he playfully has given me some crap over the years because this past weekend was not the first time that I've been on the call for Missouri, South Carolina, and I was hearing it all week, you know, oh, the Gamecock, don't give her any information, even though he does, you know, in our Friday meeting, he's very generous. But him and Dow Loggins, the South Carolina offensive coordinator, go way back. So they were texting each other throughout the week. I think there were some jabs taken that I was going to be a spy, which obviously is not the case when you're working these games. So it was a fun little back and forth, but it is interesting. You know, I get that question a lot from fans when they're like, you're covering your alma mater. How do you not be biased? How do you not feel the pain that we feel or the excitement that we feel? And I had, you know, the same situation the week before in Columbia with Florida coming to town and having that game between Florida and South Carolina. I would compare it to years ago when I was covering the Jaguars, Paul. Jalen Ramsey told me once, you know, I'm such a different player when I'm on the football field versus when I'm off the football field. There's like a switch that just flips and I become NFL Sunday Jalen Ramsey as opposed to just Jalen out on the street. And that's how I kind of feel, right? When you wake up on Saturday, it's game day. All we're hoping for is a game that's close to the end so that viewers continue to tune in and watch the great work that hopefully our crew is doing. So it really is like a switch flipped. I know some people won't believe me on that, but
yeah,
it's true.
I mean, and I think it's impossible really to explain it to fans who are so invested, but you're a professional and this is what you do. And deep down, yeah, you might have a preference, but that has nothing to do with what goes on the air.
I was going to say, too, you know, doing the Florida-South Carolina game, it was heartbreaking for the Gamecocks, the way they lose that game with less than 5 minutes to go, a 10-point lead. But in this conference and being able to spend as much time as we do in the SEC, develop these relationships with players, with coaches, I love Billy Napier, and I love being able to sit down and talk to Billy Napier about how he's getting Florida back to where it's going to be. Graham Mertz's story is incredible. Talking to Ricky Pearsall about what motivates him to come back and have the year that he's having, you almost can't help but be happy for everybody. And I joke about this all the time. Being so entrenched in the SEC and doing nothing but Southeastern Conference sports day in and day out, you almost, like, you want both teams to win. I want everybody to be happy at the end of this one because you just become so close with these programs.
No, and the fandom part is really interesting. I've given up trying to explain it to fans. I
mean, job ruins you as a fan. It really does. I mean, if we quit tomorrow and we went back to being regular, it would almost be hard because I'd sit there, you know, my fiance is a Florida grad. He loves Tennessee basketball. That's sacrilegious for a Florida fan to cheer for Tennessee, but he loves Rick Barnes and the relationship that I've been able to develop with Rick Barnes and how nice he is to me and how wonderful he is to work with. So, like, he pulls for Rick Barnes just through me. So even his fandom is affected a little bit.
Talking to Alyssa here about the season and, you know, staying with Missouri because I believe you were there for the Kansas State game. One thing we're going to talk to Drink about next hour is that moment in time. And I know he has been hard on himself even for almost blowing the game. But in real time, you had to think when that delay of game penalty occurred, this season may be over.
It was an insane sequence of events. And there was still that element of knowing what Harrison Meavis is capable of as far as being able to put it through the uprights from a distance that great. Even though you're sitting there, you're going, game on the line. Is he going to make this one, knowing that up to that point it had been a little bit inconsistent? So, yeah, you're sitting there, and I'm even texting with some of our analysts on Saturday, Chris Doering in the studio, and it's like that moment and Meavis making that kick and winning that game completely changes the narrative as opposed to what we would have been talking about for the next week, which was, you know, how do you do that at the end of that game? You're in a position to will your team to a win over a rival. And if you don't do that, that's the entire conversation. But here we are now, a one-loss Missouri team heading into a bye week and potentially deciding the SEC East next week. I mean, it's been an incredible, you talk about the switch flipping like I was a few minutes ago. That K-State game flipped the switch for Missouri this season.
Yeah, and Missouri, because that was the role Kentucky was hoping to play, and they lost that opportunity not only against Georgia but against Missouri. Mm-hmm. And now here we are because Missouri just seems like they have another week and a half to luxury, but their schedule is fairly impactful when you consider Tennessee, Florida, Arkansas. I mean, they could make a lot of noise.
And the games that they have at home, I think, are so crucial. When I look at some of the ways that schedules across the conference shake out for the next few weeks, I like Missouri's schedule the best. You got to go to Athens, which is going to be difficult, but to have South Carolina at home to kind of continue that SEC East tear after beating Kentucky, you get Tennessee at home, Florida at home, and then on the road at the end of the season against Arkansas. That's a team that at this point I think we can all say Missouri should be able to beat the Razorbacks, even though it is on the road and not in Como. But, gosh, if you can just get that one over Georgia, we could be sitting here in 2 weeks talking about Missouri going to Atlanta for an SEC championship.
Listen, how many teams have said if we could just get that one over Georgia?
No, and I'm not picking Missouri, to be very clear. I need to make that very clear. I still like Georgia to go to Atlanta, but they gave them the closest game we saw last year. So it's not crazy to think it could be close
again. We'll
see
the end of that one quite a few times next week. Great to see you. We'll see you later.
Good to see you too, Paul.
Out of Pocket. So much more to come as we continue here on a Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Les Turner, one of the great players in the country, will join us in a couple of minutes. Coach Drink at the top of the next hour. John U. Bacon on the Michigan scandal. And the old ball coach, or the head ball coach. What do they call him now? Steve Spurrier. The restaurant tour, Steve Spurrier, will join us a little bit later on. Big week. We head to Jacksonville for that game. Let's check in with some callers here. And Peter is in North Carolina. Hello, Peter.
Hey, thanks, Paul. The few solutions for problems with SEC East teams. I'm a Georgia fan. Let's start with Georgia. They don't know how to start the game fast. So Kirby Smart should tell them, you should start the game like how you drive. So that's Georgia. In Kentucky, Coach Cal should talk to Coach Stoops about how to develop players, and Coach Stoops should ask Coach Cal how to buy players, and they got both of their problems solved. I want to talk about Michigan for a second, Paul. Okay. I remember what you thought about John Harbaugh before and after he beat Ohio State for the first time a couple of years ago. And let me tell you why you thought that. So before the scandal, Michigan State, 6 years, they were 49-22, basically 8-14. And after that, they're 33-3. So they were 0-6 against Ohio State before and 2-0 after. And for people who said it didn't matter, and how would you explain that? And one last thing I want to say about Harbaugh, he did a lot more. He went to cry to his brother. He borrowed his defensive coordinator from Ravens for a year to fix his defense. And last year, he tried to hire both of the coordinators from Georgia to the Ravens. And they got Munkin and our defensive coordinator stayed. So it's he would do anything to sabotage the opponent and get some advantage. And to say it's a hot piece of garbage is an insult to garbage. And that's all I have to say. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. Interesting thoughts there. We appreciate it. Trey is up next in Arkansas. Hello, Trey.
How you doing, Paul?
We're okay, Trey.
I ain't doing too hot, as you can see what my team's record is.
I have been noticing
but,
that.
Yeah. I was going to go on a rant on Enos, but first I wanted to ask you, if Pittman is fired this year, and who do you think we should go after? I have two coaches that I want. If you can't give me those coaches, just keep Pittman. My two coaches is Gus Malzahn and Dan Mullen.
Well, first of all, I'm not really sure he's going to get fired. I think he could save the season, but he has to do something, and he can't let it get any worse. As far as those two coaches, what impresses you so much about Gus Malzahn?
He's a hometown guy. He's won at Auburn. He's won in the SEC. Same thing with Dan Mullen.
Yeah, well, I mean, he... He used Arkansas about 5 years ago to get more money from Auburn. That shouldn't bother you very much. He is from Springdale, whatever that means. As far as Dan Mullen, I think Dan Mullen is angling to get back into coaching. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. But I do not count Sam Pittman out yet. Mike is up next. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. How are you doing today?
We are doing great.
I just want to let you know, I went to Vegas about 2 years ago, took $2,000 to gamble with, and within 2 hours, I lost all of it. Vegas is not in the business to lose money. That's why they're giving anybody 20 points to bet with the Gators. Now, I'm a diehard Gator fan, make no mistake about it. I live in St. Augustine. I got a dental appointment Friday morning, but when that's done, I'm going to come see you up there at the stadium. But with that said, Georgia is a 20-point favorite, so us Gators shouldn't get too hyped up on that. Am I wrong?
Well, I think they're only a 14.5-point favorite.
Well, my gosh, we must have drafted somebody in the last 24 hours. Last time I checked, it was 20 points.
Well, check again. Thanks for the call. Jay is up next. Good afternoon.
Roll Tide, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. It was good to hear from Jerome yesterday. Welcome back, Jerome. I think he was a little hard on you, though, Paul, but it was good to hear from him nonetheless. Paul, what's all this Tennessee fans talking about bad referee calls?
Well, that's been one of the narratives after the game, that they felt like the referees took the game from them.
Well, ball fans, y'all need to get over it. We whipped the snot out of y'all. Better luck next year. But, Paul, I want your personal opinion on this Jim Harbaugh deal. I know you're not a big fan of his, but what's going on in Michigan?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious you got somebody who is a rogue actor. The real question isn't whether this guy did all that. It's pretty obvious he did. The question is, you know, what did Harbaugh know, and when did he know it, or assuming he knew anything, and was it sanctioned by the school? And I mean, I've seen a lot of people draw conclusions, but I've yet to see anything more than that. And you know, there's nothing illegal about stealing signals during the game. That's done all the time. Remember, Reese Davis was here a couple weeks ago, and he talked about how he was at the Oklahoma-Texas game, and they were stealing each other's signals blindly. What's against the NCAA rules is to send somebody out in advance to go to another stadium in preparation. Now, the real question is, can you make the case stick? Is it more than circumstantial? And even if you can, what and who is going to do something about it?
Well, have a good one, Paul.
Thank you very much. And I don't think anybody will do anything about it. It's not a matter of liking Jim Harbaugh. I mean, I don't dislike Jim Harbaugh. I've been critical of his coaching in the past. I happen to think he's doing a pretty fabulous job right now, though. Tide is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Tide. Tide, you there?
Hello, Paul.
Yes, sir.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Paul, I'm a transplant from Alabama. I was at Alabama 66 to 69. My family operates a wedding and event barn about 30 minutes north of Clemson. During the COVID, I got a phone call one day from a lady representing a small community church. She said, our gated community leaders will not let us have our Sunday services in their facility, and I was wondering if we could use your barn. I said, certainly. She said, well, Ken, I know from that big A with a swash on it that you're an Alabama fan, so I got a real nice surprise for you on Sunday morning. I said, great. Sunday morning rolls around. I'm turning on the heat, setting up the podium, and in walks Don Munson. He speaks to the lady. She directs him back to me. He walks up, puts his hand out, and says, I'm Don Munson. I said, Don, I know who you are. You're the Eli Gold of the Clemson Tigers. He laughed, and he said, Ken, I know you're poking fun at me, but he said, I want to tell you a story. He said, some 20 years ago, I got hired by Clemson. Said I showed up on the first Monday morning. Beautiful young lady tells me that she's going to escort me back to my office. She does. Spartan is an understatement. It was a metal desk, a metal chair, a black telephone, and nothing else. She looked at me and she said, is there anything I could get for you, Mr. Munson? He said, well, a yellow pad might be nice. So she leaves and I'm sitting there saying, my Lord, what am I supposed to do now? She comes back with the yellow pad, and as soon as she lays it on my desk, the phone rings. I hesitate for a moment. I'm thinking, how do I answer this phone? Clemson Broadcasting, good morning, this is Don Munson. He said, I finally settled on hello. He said, there was a very rich voice on the other end. And the voice said, Mr. Munson, I want to be one of the first to congratulate you on entering the broadcasting fraternity. And then he asked him the classic question, Don, are you open to a little feedback? And certainly I answered, absolutely. He said, well, I want to share some things with you that you should absolutely never do. And then I also want to share with you some things that you must always do. He said, I scribbled for 20 minutes, 3 pages of notes. He said, I still have those notes, and I refer to them often.
Oh, my.
He said, Eli Gold mentored me from that day to one day last week. He said, he's my friend, and I don't have a better friend in the world. I just thought that Alabama and Clemson fans might want to know that story.
Well, that is a beautiful story, Todd, and it's very personal to me because of my affinity for Eli, and the fact that he gave me, as you may have heard me say once, if you haven't, he helped me get my first radio job, and
how about that?
Has remained a friend for 40 years, and it's so great to hear that story. Thank you very, very much. We'll take a short break. Dallas Turner, a name that Eli Gold called out quite a few times last Saturday afternoon in Tuscaloosa. He'll join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back, and we are really delighted to head to Tuscaloosa right now and be joined by Dallas Turner, one of the truly great defensive players in the country, coming off a big win over Tennessee. Dallas, thanks for making time. Good afternoon and congratulations on the season so far.
Good afternoon. I appreciate you for having me.
Thank you. Well, let's start last Saturday because at halftime, let's be honest, things didn't look all that great from where most of us were sitting. What was it like in that locker room and what was the level of optimism about coming out in the second half?
I mean, honestly, you know, it was still a lot of good energy in the locker room, you know. A lot of leaders stepped up to put a lot of good things in a lot of people's ears in the locker room and stuff like that. But, you know, it was just a lot of halftime adjustments that we had to make defensively and offensively, you know, to have the outcome we had. So
it's interesting because fans were going crazy in Tuscaloosa. Folks around the country were shaking their head. But, from watching you and your teammates, as you alluded to, explain how you can stay that calm. You're down 13 to a really good team. A lot hasn't gone right. How do you stay in the moment there without losing faith?
I mean, honestly, you know, every day in practice, you know, Coach Saban always talks about having poise. So, you know, I feel like that was a very big emphasis in our player meeting that we had on Thursday. So, you know, I feel like we carried that over to on Saturday. You know, we just had poise all throughout the game and just tried to play for 60 minutes.
So is Coach Saban any different in that particular moment when you're down by 13 as opposed to being up by 13?
I mean, no, you know, Coach Saban, he always emphasizes being 0-0 as soon as you walk into the halftime or walk in for halftime and stuff like that. So, you know, he just always emphasizes on playing for 60 minutes and just always not getting complacent no matter what the score is. So, yeah.
Let me ask you about Coach Saban because I saw him Saturday morning. We had a chance to talk on our show as we were getting ready for the day in Tuscaloosa. And he talked about the appreciation, Dallas, of this team. Different than last year when you had Will Anderson and Bryce. But he seemed to really be enjoying the ride, even though he's often joked about how difficult it's been.
I mean, honestly, you know, with the type of leaders we have on this team, you know, and the type of camaraderie we have as a unit, as a whole team, you know, it's a lot of good energy on and off the field. You know, you've seen a lot more guys hang out with each other off the field, you know, doing little things like, you know, just getting something to eat or, you know, like going to the bowling alley or something like that. But, you know, it's just little things that we do on and off the field, you know, that make us a team that we are now. So,
and Dallas, let's talk about that leadership, because last year I mentioned Will Anderson and everybody, you know, looked up to him. I know you did, but you're now in that spot. You're now one of those guys that so many young people are looking up to. Discuss the leadership part of it, because I've heard you mention that a couple of times. And what do you guys display so everybody else can follow suit?
I mean, you know, first and foremost, you know, you got to lead by example, you know, by doing the little things right. And by just, you know, just being consistent every day in what you do, you know. putting in a lot of work every day, you know, putting in extra work and stuff like that. You know, when young guys see older guys do things like that, they tend to follow that. And, you know, it's just like a, the energy is everywhere on the team. So, you know, it's just kind of a monkey see, monkey do thing, you know, but, you know, it's in a good direction, though, so.
We're chatting with Dallas Turner. Dallas, of course, grew up in Fort Lauderdale. Your dad was a pretty well-known college basketball player at FAMU, an All-American, Hall of Famer. Somebody told me you were thinking about basketball at one point. So tell us about your basketball career and how you made the pivot.
I mean, you know, back in my heyday, and I was like 20, 30 pounds lighter, you know, I could move a little differently, you know, jump very high, of course. But, you know, I got to see a lot of things, you know, through travel basketball. You know, I got invited to the Team USA camp over there in Colorado Springs. So, you know, it was just get to being around a lot of guys that are in the NBA now, you know, it's something special to be a part of and stuff like that, you know. But basketball honestly had my heart at one point. I mean, of course, it had a big impact because of who my father is and stuff like that, though. But, you know, football was my first love, though. So, you know, I couldn't go wrong with football.
Dallas, was there a particular basketball player that you emulated, that you wanted to be like as you were growing up?
I mean, ever since I was born, you know, I've been a LeBron fan. So, you know, King James, you know. All that, so, yeah.
I saw a little bit of him last night. I mean, I think now, I mean, he's the oldest guy in the league, but by no means has that affected him. It's really fascinating. What was that line of demarcation when you said, okay, I've had fun with basketball. It's in the family blood, but it's time to be a football player full time.
I mean, it was probably when actually my senior year. You know, it was. My senior year was my first year not playing basketball. You know, it was a little different, but, you know, I just had to lock in, you know, with the opportunity I had coming to play football at the University of Alabama. So, you know, I just had to take it more serious and, you know, just be a man about my business.
Now, I know it's not proper to talk out of school, considering your coach is the greatest coach of all time, but I've heard Coach Saban in interviews I've had with him and others. I mean, he loves to talk about his own basketball skills. That famous pickup league where he was the commissioner and a participant. Have you ever been on the court with him?
Oh, no, I've never been on the court with him. I feel like, you know, he moved pretty good for his age, but I don't think he getting up and down on no basketball court. So. But, you know, I did hear about that, you know, when I was younger and stuff like that. But, you know, he's a competitor, you know, so it'll be like, for example, a walkthrough that we have on Fridays. He'll line up as a tight end, you know, and just say a formation, and then he'll say, oh, I'm running this certain route. And then if, like, someone's guarding him or someone's in front of him, he'll whisper, like, oh, you can't guard me. I'll run around you or something like that. So, you know, he's a very competitive person, so.
Indeed he is. But I'm glad you finally put to bed this ability, because, I mean, he'll turn 72 next week, and at that age, you can have a great life, but you shouldn't be on the basketball court.
Yeah, not at all, not at all.
let's talk about the bye week. I'm sure everybody's happy. Just I don't know what exactly you guys get to do or don't get to do, but what is this weekend like coming up without a football game for the first time since August?
I mean, so I'm going back home, so, you know, it's always a good feeling to go back home. But, you know, like, throughout the whole week, you know, we still have practice and things like that. But, you know, we just don't want to get complacent with where we at as a team, you know, and we just still want to try and be productive for every opportunity we get, you know, practicing and stuff like that. You know, you got to take a lot of advantage of weeks like this, so.
Dallas, I know there's so much about not looking ahead, but it's not really looking ahead anymore. The next game is LSU, and that's always such a critical game on the calendar. Of course, everyone remembers last year in Baton Rouge. Is that a memory that you think about or will think about, or do you guys just worry about what you can do to control the outcome?
I mean, honestly, it's always been about us as a team and what we do. You know, we just got to be more disciplined, especially from last game and stuff like that. But, you know, honestly, it's just we never worry about the other team. You know, it's always about what we do during practice. Our practice habits and what we do on the field, and, you know, just keeping poise on playing for all 60 minutes.
Do you feel as if, because it's easy for a commentator to make this statement, but you're the leader of that team. It just seems like this team is getting better. Can you address that before we let you get back to work?
I mean, honestly, you know, every week we grow as a team. Every week, So, you know, it's just what we do in practice and, you know, how we come together as practice players and, you know, just practicing the right habits every day. So, you know, you practice how you play and stuff like that. So, you know, every day in practice, we try and emphasize, you know, making good habits, finishing plays, and, you know, and just emphasizing playing for all 60 minutes, you know, so.
In final question on that, in terms of those habits, are those just fundamentals? Are those techniques? Are those things that you do every single day that you're working on?
I mean, it's on and off the field. You know, you create discipline off the field as much as you do on the field, you know. So, you know, just being more disciplined, you know, making smart decisions on the field, you know, and not costing the team any, you know, penalties or stuff like that. But, you know, just finishing plays every day in practice, you know, and just having the right techniques in practice too. You know, just cleaning up on things that, you know, that we can improve on as a team. So,
well, Dallas, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And thanks for giving us the scoop on Coach Saban. We won't let him see this conversation, and he'll think you're in his camp, even though you pretty much have ended his basketball career. Dallas, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
It's been our pleasure. Dallas Turner, what a fine young man, and how cool was that to talk to him. We'll take a short break. We're back after that.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Great to have all of you with us. Busy show. Coach String coming up shortly. You heard from Dallas there. And Mike is up next in Houston. Hello, Mike.
Paul, if you would, imagine that you are an esteemed member of the CFP committee. Wouldn't it be reasonable for you to truly question the validity of Michigan's season up to this point and their record? At least to try and protect the integrity of the committee that you're serving on?
I understand the concerns, and I'm sure when they start talking next week, they'll give us this gibberish. But deep down, I don't think they're remotely concerned. Their job, as I'm sure they'll tell us, is to look at what they see on the field. Somebody else's job is to try to determine whether rules were broken on the way to the field.
Yeah, but I don't mean from a perspective of compliance. I mean, from the perspective of, is the product on the field a legitimate product that deserves CFP participation? Because if they don't have that advantage, would the product be the same?
Well, I don't think so far it would have mattered. I think it could matter in critical games, but there's nobody that Michigan has played right now that even if they didn't know anything, I mean, Michigan could have beaten every one of these schools to the same degree without even a game plan. That's how one-sided these games would have been.
Well, I think you're being a little generous, at least in terms of what they're capable of and Harbaugh's coaching acumen.
Well, there hasn't been a game. I mean, nobody scored more than 10 points. So, I mean, we're caught in some gray area. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and in the NFL or in Major League Baseball or in a league that has some legitimate jurisdiction and a commissioner, it would be a fair concern. But in college football, when nobody's really in charge of anything, and you know, this committee is not part of the NCAA. This is a separate committee that is part of the CFP, which runs the postseason of college football. So you could argue very easily that whatever happens leading up to the game is not their concern, nor it is under their purview. I know that sounds like a cop-out, Mike, it's not. I'm just telling you the reality of college football.
No, I don't disagree with you. I do think, let's assume for a moment that Michigan stops with the shenanigans and is no longer using the knowledge that was acquired from this operative, and they start to waver a bit. Let's say they win some games, but they're much closer, or even lose. You know, for these folks to end up in the playoff, this could be just like when Alabama played them a few years ago. I think it was in the Orange Bowl or Citrus Bowl or whatever, and, you know, it wasn't really much of a contest. You know, and we've seen that historically when all these other teams that are perceived to be top tier get to the playoff in the semifinal game, it's often a mismatch when they face teams like LSU, Georgia, Alabama, you know, and it's just, that's what has been disappointing about this 14 playoff format. It said there's the Southeastern Conference elite, and there's Ohio State and the rest of the country.
Well, Mike, thank you for the call. A couple of years ago, it was Clemson and Alabama. Now it's broadened a little bit, but I would never cover for anybody. I mean, I'm a big believer in integrity, but there's such a disconnect between trying to what we know now. There has to be more, and there has to be a direct line between this guy Stallions and Jim Harbaugh, and as of this hour, we're still looking for it. Bash in Boulder is up next.
Thank you for taking my call, Paul Feinbaum. How are we doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
That is great to hear. So there was something that you said earlier in this first hour that I honestly disagree with. And before I get to that, Paul, I just wanted to break some common ground and let you know an ironic fact that did you know that both of our favorite orange football teams are currently 16-1 against their big red rivals at this point?
Didn't realize that.
Well, that was the Tennessee Volunteers against the Alabama Crimson Tide, and unfortunately the Denver Broncos against the Kansas City Chiefs. But what can you do? You can't pick every football team correctly, can you?
I can.
Yes, you can. If anyone can, Paul Feinbaum, it is definitely you. But the one thing that you said earlier on this show that I just have to disagree with is when you said Deion Sanders can only make news when he makes comments about Jim Harbaugh. Paul, is that really a legitimate statement that
I realize you live in Colorado and there's a lot of smoke, marijuana smoke around, but I mean, you're not really taking taking that statement literally, are you?
No, sir, I'm not. I just thought it was quite hilarious that even when Jim Harbaugh is making news, he even ends up in Deion Sanders' press conference.
He does it for a reason, Bash. And I was watching some ESPN show today, and they said, because Coach Prime equates ratings. So he's become a cheap trick to get more people to listen and watch. We all do it, but that's the reality of it. The football team itself is not that important anymore.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.